Public education is under attack from so many different places. Public educators, we have to be so focused on protecting the backside of the person next to us. How do you do that? You have the consummate professional. If you're not the consummate professional, you are adding to our chink in the armor. If you're making bad decisions, if you are using lapses of judgment to harm kids, it affects all of us. A non-negotiable for me is understand you have a shield in one hand, you have a spear in the other, and you got to use them wisely, but you got to use them as a group. It's not about you. It's not about your ego. It's not about your dossier. It's about helping kids and doing what's best for kids.
Welcome, everyone, to the Change Starts Here podcast. I'm your host, Dustin Odom, and I am incredibly excited for the first interview of the season. It's with an amazing man, Tommy Schmalzy, out of South Carolina. This conversation, as you can probably sense already in my palpability, this conversation is one of the most fun, deep, thoughtful, engaging conversations I've had in a long time. And I'm not trying to be hyperbolic. I'm telling you, I had an awesome time in this conversation. The first thing is, if you guys remember when I filmed this, you remember my son calls it the great cancellation of 2024. My son and I got stuck in Atlanta for 3 days, and I had to film this with him. And so I'm pretty sure we've taken out all the parts where the background noise might have been a problem. But the conversation, I was very nervous going into, thinking, how is this going to be a great conversation? How are we both going to be engaged? And Tommy takes care of all of that. He's someone who engages on deep thoughts, on personal challenges and personal struggles. He's someone who engages on kind of the more challenging philosophical thoughts. And he's someone that is really about people. One of my favorite stories that you'll hear in a little bit is how he sees himself as the head recruiter of his district, which is a refreshing way to think about your job as superintendent. And he shares a little bit about how he brings that to life on occasion. And so I think there's just so much. If you're an aspiring administrator, if you're a current administrator, if you're someone who just loves education and leadership, this is a great conversation to listen to. So thank you as all. It's been for being a loyal listener. It's been a while since we've connected. I hope you enjoy this as much as I do. I'm excited for this conversation and enjoy it. Thanks. All right, Dr. Schmalzy, it has been, I don't know, I want to say since February when I got a chance to not meet you, but see you in front of a large audience in Charlotte where you helped make it rain. And it's been something, you know, your heart, your passion for this work, but also for people around you is infectious. And so this is an interview I've been looking forward to for a long time. So I just want to say thank you for making time to be here with us today.
Yeah, Dustin, I appreciate that. And it's humbling, first of all. Secondly, when you said make it rain, I want to clarify, we had a storm there in a good way, a passionate storm about what being a leader is like. And I'm glad that you were there to participate. And I, too, have looked forward to this talk. So let's do this. I'm excited.
Yeah, let's get the party started. So the same question we've asked everybody for about the last 4 years is, who are you and what do you love about what you do?
Yeah, a good question. By definition, I'm an educator. I find myself caught in the world of wanting what's best for others, a servant leader. And I know that sounds cliche, I guess, but servant leadership to me is the definition of why we're here on earth. And I could be spiritual. I could go that route. I could go just as a leadership style. What does servant mean? And it's putting others before you to better them so that they can better their community. And in a nutshell, that's who I am. That's who I've always been, even at an early age.
Yeah. So when did you get the bug, or what led to your decision to go into the world of education?
Probably my sophomore year of college. I was in business management. And if I had to draw one more supply demand chart, I think I was going to roll out of my chair. And I called my parents and I told them, I'm switching majors. I'm sorry. And I might add a year to my college career. And my mom literally laughed and said, we're waiting for this call, honey. And she said, I know you're going into education, right? And I said, yeah, absolutely. So that at that point, I knew education was where I was going. And then throughout that career of being a teacher, being a coach, it led right into the leadership role of now making a bigger impact on a bigger stage. And so the bug was early. I was, 20 years old at the time. And from that point on, I knew I was going to be an educator.
But how did you know? Like, I have three young boys, you know, 10, 8, and 3. And my 8-year-old is kind of always trying to like engage with kids who are younger than them, loves to try to teach. And so my wife and I were both teachers. And so he always tells us, hey, I think I want to be a teacher. I'm like, okay, well, he was around us and he has a natural affinity for it. What was it, coaching for you? Was it, how did you get, you know, exposure to it, to knowing that, you know, the discipline of education is really where your heart was?
Yeah, I look back, my quick answer to that question is Sarah Anderson. Sarah Anderson was an English teacher. I was born and raised in Wisconsin, and my family moved to South Carolina when I was a sophomore after volleyball season, my sophomore year of high school. Culture shock. We didn't know a soul. We literally did not know anybody in South Carolina. And so later she picked up on, I was struggling. I was kind of going through the motions, and she took me in the hallway and she looked me in the eye and she said, Tommy Schmalzy, you are going to change the world. And when you have that kind of belief that someone really pumps into you, there's a reason that we were in the hallway together. There's a reason that I had that conversation with an English teacher. And from that point on, it was a game changer. I looked at things differently. I couldn't let her down. She had that much faith in me. She put that much faith in a student, you know, a 17-year-old snotty-nosed kid from Wisconsin who talked funny. And she said, you are going to change the world. And I owe it to her to give my best. And that's what I try to do daily.
Yeah, I laughed at the beginning of it because I grew up in Tallahassee, Florida, which is basically, you know, Georgia, Alabama, and then moved to Texas for college, and then went to Missouri, Midwest, and St. Louis after college. And I've been there for forever. And it's a little bit of a culture shock going that way. However, I always find it more of a culture shock for folks that come from the Midwest to the South. I'm curious, what lessons did you learn about how to assimilate that help you today be a better leader?
It is so funny you talk about that, because transitioning from high school to college was a piece of cake. I mean, making friends was easy. You had to do it. It was humbling. So first of all, I've had a blessed life, Dustin. I have a great family. I've had great friends. I have great experiences. I haven't had tragedy like a lot of people experience. And so I took a lot of things for granted in my development. And looking back now through adult lens, I noticed a lot of things. One is I was a champion for the underdog, always had been, as a senior class president, right? So I'm this new kid a year and a half earlier, and here I am senior class president. You should be egotistical. No, I was the opposite. I was the guy hanging out with the freshmen on the freshman hall saying, hey, you can get through high school. It's going to be okay. I have that heart for that. And I think that's what's changed me as a teacher. You know, I AP classes, that's fine. Teach those. Yeah, that's great. Give me your tough classes. Give me your dropout kids. That's how I looked at my teaching career. I want those kids that are most likely to drop out. Let me shape them. Let me love on them. Let me be Sarah Anderson to them. And that's shaped me differently. I won't take anything back.
Yeah. So maybe that's the lead into another curiosity I had coming into this conversation, which is when you think about your educational philosophy, I know that's a big kind of question, but like, you just said you're a champion for the underdog, and that may be part of it, or maybe it's being the Sarah Anderson. How would you define, for those listening, what your education philosophy is that guides you every day?
Yeah, I think you learn those. Like you said, philosophy, that's a big thing. You know, how many things go into that basket?
Yeah.
So I'll change it a little bit. I think when I moved into leadership, that's when I really started looking at educational philosophy. Up until that point, when I taught and was a coach, I was just, you know, faking it till I made it, right? I trial by fire. And then in education, we get to start over every year. And that's what's so great about our career. You can make 8,000 mistakes a year before, and you start the next season batting 1,000. So when I got into leadership, that's when I started really thinking about philosophy differently. So philosophy then became a hiring tactic. I want to know from this person sitting across the table, what do you believe about education? What do you believe about kids? And so I think I really didn't shape my philosophical, I guess, North Star till I was in administration.
Well, to that point, I mean, right now, everyone's struggling to find the right people to be in front of their kids. Have you heard, you know, either from what you all do in your district or just friends of yours that have been in the same mode of hiring, what are some of the best questions or ways that people have tried to create to help gauge authenticity and passion for students and fit for the role? Because I know it's really hard. There's no silver bullet, but like, what are the things that you try to do to give you the best chance to find, hire the right person?
Yeah, great question, because there's nothing more important that you can do as a leader, especially at the school level, than to bring someone in the organization and also coach somebody out of an organization. And they're both shape you as an organization. There's a guy named Mike Rutherford, Dr. Rutherford. It's called the Rutherford Learning Group. And I tapped into him early on as a fledgling assistant principal in middle school. I think I was in my late 20s or maybe in mid-20s at that time. He steered me to a test study called 12 Good Questions. And the 12 Good Questions are shaped around the three essential characteristics of a great educator. Number one, content knowledge. How deep can you go in your content? Not breadth, but depth. Number two, pedagogy. Do you have tools in your tool chest that you can pull and use to reach each kid differently? And the third one is compelling nature. I define that as, can you draw kids to you so you can draw them to the work? In those questions, there's four questions in each of those realms. For example, Dustin, if I was interviewing you, I would ask you, Justin, tell me about your favorite teacher and what made them especially successful for you, either a coach, it could be a piano teacher, or it could be, you know, a traditional teacher, high school, college, elementary school. And you would say what?
Well, yeah, let's try this actually. So I have two. One's a teacher, one is actually a custodian at my school growing up. Teacher Miss Ladadio, she actually was probably the least exciting teacher in terms of like how she taught, right? But she had the highest expectations, and everybody talked about every year is like, good luck getting an A in that class. So I took that as a personal challenge. Mm-hmm. And then our custodian is someone who just always checked in and how are you? He's kind of like your Sarah Anderson. He's like, hey, I see you can be something great. Go be great. So those are the two for me.
So we go back, and why ask that question? Because those teachers want to emulate that. You know, if it was successful for them, out of anybody you could name, Miss Ligadio, if I'm saying that right, Ligadio. Yep. Yeah. Let's edify that. And I'm going to try to be like her. I'm going to stretch kids. I'm going to, So another thing that you said, how do you get good people? I realized early, some people are horrible interviewees, right?
Right.
So they're so nervous. This job means everything to them. And they get flustered because I can't think of the word I'm trying to say. So I developed a technique where, one, I give them the questions ahead of time when they're in the lobby. The receptionist says, hey, welcome. We're so glad you're here. Here are the questions. What? Yeah, you can phone a friend if you want right now. And then when we bring you in, I use that as a time to tell you about what my school is. And that grew into later, I never did the introduction. I had one of my teachers do the introduction. Hey, if you're going to be here at you know, Rock Hill High School, you need to know, one, we believe in pushing each other. Two, we believe in every kid can succeed. That you put your philosophy out there. And then I say, well, about halfway through the interview, Dustin, we're going to call a timeout and I'm going to put you in my office and I'm going to let you reflect on any answer you gave us. And meanwhile, we're going to be talking about you. And what we're trying to do is fill in any gaps that we thought you left out there. And when you come back in, when I come get you, from that point on, what you say goes. So you can change an answer completely. What I found is you get the authentic person. They think the interview is over. I handled the tough stuff. Now we're just talking. And we've hired some really good teachers that we would not have hired if not for that. Another thing is we did not hire some teachers that came back and said, nope, everything was good. If you're going to work for me, you have to be able to reflect. You have to be able to look back and say, how can I improve? And that's really the first test. And unfortunately you failed. And that's a big test. So go be a great teacher somewhere else, but I need someone who's going to take advantage of an opportunity. So how do you get good people? I think you treat them fairly and you set up a system of success, not a gotcha.
Yeah, I love the practice of reflection, right? I've never, ever, ever heard of an interview where you get feedback, you walk away and then come back and can talk about it. When I studied at Oxford for a little bit, and the thing I loved there is that you write papers and you get a chance to defend it and then kind of rewrite your system. And so
yes.
I always felt like it made me stronger and have a growth mindset, but people are kind of picking at your arguments. And so having that second chance is great because to your point, you can see, you know, their authentic self, but also do they have a growth mindset? Are they taking advantage of whatever feedback they're getting and moving with it, right?
Yeah. And that's so important because that shapes culture. And we believe in PLCs here. And if your PLC has that model of, if this is just expected, this is just how we do things, we reflect and we provide feedback not only to ourselves, but to others. So that's one way to track good people is to treat them fairly from the jump. As soon as they walk in your school or your district office, they're interviewing you. And that's something that we forget, especially with a teacher shortage. So another thing I think is important, Dustin, is I'm the head recruiter for our district. We have about 16,500 students. And a year ago, I reached out to a university nearest Winthrop, and I said, I need to know where your best student teacher is. And they said, unfortunately, Tommy, it's in an area. It's a district next to you. He's not in your district. I said, that's okay. And I stalked him, to be honest. I hunted him down. I found his number. I called him. And I said, Miguel, hello, my name is Tommy Schmalzi, and I'm the head recruiter for Rock Hill Schools. He said, Dr. Schmalzi, I know who you are, and you're the superintendent. I said, no, sir, I'm the head recruiter, and I want you to come work for us. And I said, I'll meet you for coffee or lunch, whatever, and I just want to talk to you and get to know you a little bit. And turned out the next day he had open time, and that's what I did. We sat down and talked, and I gave him a contract on the spot, and he has radically changed how I see recruiting. You see his heart on a one-on-one. It wasn't formal questions. I did ask him his favorite teacher, though, to be honest. I've used that technique, and I've asked my team to use that technique. Let's meet him personally. Let's not set up this big, and then let's let the principal weigh in, right? I think it's important to have site-based management. But when you see heart and you feel passion, you got to go after it.
So I'm going to throw all my questions out the window right now because I'm just fascinated. So I love one paradigm that you have is you see yourself as a head recruiter. What are some other key paradigms that you have to help you better lead from the superintendent level? And you can break it down to the principal level as well. But I'm curious, like, because, yeah, I think most superintendents say, yeah, my job is to try to help recruit, but they've got somebody else to do it. So what are those key roles that you think exist within the superintendency to make you successful?
Okay, so a couple of non-negotiables for me. One, Fridays are school days. If you don't see me at the district office, if you do see me on Friday, something's up. I want to be in schools. I want to walk schools. I want to talk with teachers, custodians, bus drivers. I want to see them in the morning, our grounds crew. Just case in point, just little things, Dustin, at the top of my head. We do 4-day work weeks in the summer. A lot of districts do, right? We just extend the day. It's a longer day. And in my visit with one of our head landscaping foremen, he said, Dr. Schmalzi, we really appreciate the 4-day work week, but it kills us in the landscaping because we only have 4 days to do the work. And if it rains one day, we get pushed back and we want our schools to look great, but we can't cut now for 2 days. Is there any way that we could look at? So what we've done this year is they get 5-day work week in the summer, and then they get 4-day work weeks in the wintertime. So the grassroots approach of going to the people that are doing the work is important. Sometimes we think that at a higher level of leadership, we have all the answers. Unfortunately, no. I think best leaders of today have the best questions, not the best answers. And so that was important to hear that a 5-day work week is better for them and a 4-day during the winter. Another non-negotiable for me is developing people. As a superintendent, I know I have a lot of balls in the air and plate spinning, but I've committed to the development of principal leadership, and that could be APs, that could be principals. And I actually reached out to an executive coaching team to come in because I benefited from life coaches. And what we have set up here, Dustin, is pretty fascinating. We have triads, meaning it's three people that it's like a superintendent, and previous, my triad was two principals. So they held me accountable. I mean, we were in a text string every morning, and personal goals, professional goals. And again, I asked them, brutal honesty with me, and you hold me accountable. If I say this is a goal, I expect it to be a goal, and you hold me to it. And so they did. They would text me and say, hey, you've been lazy today. You're going to work out every day at 5:30. What are you doing? Things like that. So when you have up and down accountability, I think that's important. This year, we're doing quads because we brought assistant principals into the fold. So we're going to know every assistant principal's goal, and they're going to know my goal, and they're going to know our executive director's goals. So having a deeper relationship in development, and I say development, it's so funny. I learned more from my principal triad than they learned from me. I guarantee it. I had two just outstanding gentlemen, family men, who sharpened me as a husband, as a father, and as a superintendent. And I think that's paramount. Is titles mean nothing to me in this organization. Yep. I don't even like the doctor, unfortunately. Yeah, people earn it, and that's important, and kudos. But in the end, I'm just a man. And so that's a non-negotiable, is you develop the people around you. And then this year, to lead with courage. I think public education is under attack from so many different places. This is a good editing time for you, because I posted the picture of the 300. If you can think back of that movie, when they did the shield. So there's, I don't know how many, there's 300 of them, but at that time, maybe 150 all right. surrounded themselves with their shields and their spears. And there was no way to get into that shell. That's the image I'm using this year. As public educators, we have to do that. We have to be so focused on protecting the backside of the person next to us. How do you do that? Well, you have the consummate professional. If you're not the consummate professional, you are adding to our chink in the armor. If you're making bad decisions, if you are using lapses of judgment to harm kids, it affects all of us. And so a non-negotiable for me is understand you have a shield in one hand, you have a spear in the other, and you got to use them wisely, but you got to use them as a group. It's not about you. It's not about your ego. It's not about your dossier. It's about helping kids and doing what's best for kids.
That's awesome. I like the head recruiter. We got grassroots. We're developing people, and we're leading with courage. How do you get people? One thing that I find within education is that a lot of leaders, and particularly great teachers, can sometimes be more rule followers than leading with courage, or leading, like taking risks seems to be rarer. And so how do you help create a culture, whether your principals or yourself, that get your folks to take their right kind of risks?
Yeah, we're both golfers. And so the risk reward is important. Course management, you know, I'm not going to hit a 3-wood, you know, I'm not going to carry 280 over water. You know, I'll take my par and walk away. So the way I push that out to risk taking, it has to be an educated risk. And I would argue 9 times out of 10, if you are working out of your skill set, it's going to be a good risk. If you are working out of an area of weakness, you got to think twice about that. And so that's why teaming is so important. That's why professional learning community is so important, because you're using the skill sets of those around you rather than just you. Yeah, rule followers, that is so funny you talk about that. One of my most successful principals called me. It's a random Tuesday evening. And she said, Dr. Smallsey, I know we're supposed to do X with literacy. My research tells me different. And I want to do Y. And I said, well, all right, well, make sure Y works, right? Make sure Y works. And if you do it to that, now you're the model that we're going to follow. And if you fall on your face, it's okay, because you've done the research, you put your heart into it, and we're not always going to hit a home run when we step up the plate. Heck, Hall of Famer, 1 out of 3, and you're in the Hall of Fame, just getting a hit. So let's shoot for the homer. If you hit a triple or double, that's great. We'll build off that.
Yeah. A second ago, you talked about, you know, challenges that you've been facing. What are the biggest challenges Rock Hill schools have faced over the last couple of years, or currently right now as you're going into this school year?
Yeah, teacher shortage is the biggest, and that's nationally, that's around, I mean, everywhere. So how to be creative with that? Let's look at, we have some international teachers that work hard for us, but there's a culture difference. And it goes back to, you know, me being from Wisconsin, moving to South Carolina, there's an adjustment time. And so we put in a lot of support systems to help these teachers just with culture. I mean, they are fabulous with the X's and O's. So the pedagogy, we talked about the three areas. Pedagogy, they're great. Content knowledge, they're great. The compelling nature, they almost apologize for being Ooh. Different. You know, I'm sorry, you might not understand my accent. I said, no, own that. Make fun of yourself. Make fun of, yeah, I know I talk fast, or I know my accent is. The kids are enduring that. They pick up on that, and they love you for that. Be real. Be authentic. But that's one thing, teacher shortage. Another thing is finances, how we're being funded. It's almost like we have our hat in the hand. And I hate that because we're not leading out of strength when you do that. We offer a product that is the foundation of this country. I truly believe public education built this country. And it's different in different nations and how they do it. I joke that we should have a Statue of Liberty at every school door because we take tired, humble masses. We don't pick our raw materials. We take all of you where you are, and we meet you there, and we grow you. And so I think we deserve a better shake at the coffer. But fund us the way that we should be funded, and I think we can give you a better outcome.
You feel like in your job, so you, in the teacher shortage, you're creating, you know, recruiting the right people, trying to create an environment that keeps the right people. And then if you're trying to figure out the funding solution, I guess you have to spend quite a bit of your time maybe lobbying, in a sense, with the state legislator or other entities, right?
Correct.
Got it.
Correct. It's just there's so many things that affect us, Dustin. Food insecurity. You would think in the United States of America, you would not have kids that don't know where their next meal comes from. We have our board supported, our administration asked for, and our community asked for free breakfast and lunch for everybody. So every student that walks our campuses gets two meals a day free. It cost us, I mean, there's a big cost to that, but kids can't learn when they're hungry. It's just impossible. And so when you meet them at their basic needs at a minimum, that's a start. And so when you add those things to the list that you wouldn't think you would have to in America, but we do, that's important. We have a back the pack program where kids take home in a backpack food for the weekend. If not, they wouldn't eat. Is it all our kids? Absolutely not. And it's a neat program where the student who led it last year, who was in charge of the logistics, he was a senior, he pulled me aside and said, Doc, my friends used to receive backpacks full of food when I was a student, and I never knew, like an elementary student, and I never knew where it came from. And now I'm here organizing this for other kids, and it makes me feel darn good. And just to hear that, I get goosebumps. I apologize for that. But it's the heart of providing for kids. And that's something you never thought you'd hear in America, to be honest, in today's society.
Yeah. I mean, talk about today's society. God, whether it's in conversations with educators, even non-educators, there's a lack of trust within, you know, school systems, of leadership, right? There's a lack of trust of families outside school system and inside the school system. Now, what role does trust play in your leadership, and how important is it to build trust with each constituency that you have?
Yeah, I guess my team called you and said, make sure Tommy talks about trust. Because that's who,
Yeah.
The funny thing, I have three big rocks in Rock Hill. So we used to play on the word rocks, but I talked about one. PLCs is one. MTSS, multi-tier systems of support. So you have layers of how we support people. And I don't mean just students. I mean adults as well. The third one is trusted professionalism. And I had the opportunity at that symposium where we made it storm together, Dustin. I talked with Mr. Covey, and I said, what comes first, the trust or the professionalism? right? Do you wait to see if people are professional and then you trust them? Or do you trust them? He said, Tommy, the trust always has to come first. It has to be the first thing that's built on. And then when people fall short of that, you help them with the professionalism, which then leads to more trust. So that you hit it on the head. I've done everything that I can think of with community to garner support. I reach people where they are. I do neighborhood meetings. I do, you know, sit down to lunch with the retired groups. I think it's important that we put a name with a face in the community. And then also, what is trust? Well, trust means you do what you say you're going to do. Trust means you treat everybody with respect. Those types of things, those characteristics of how you determine trust, we use as the foundation of our everyday activities.
So there are some leaders out there that may feel like they have lost trust of their staff or lost trust within their organization. When someone loses trust or believes they've lost trust, what encouragement do you have for them to be able to try to rebuild it versus thinking, oh, life is over. I can never fix this. I got to go somewhere else.
Tough one. So number one, first, you have to believe that you made an error, right? So if you broke that trust, you have to own it and you have to be real with it. I don't care what level you are, what title you have. You owe it to the organization to say, look, I messed up and here's how I messed up. Acknowledge it and then make amends. And I think to make amends, you have to start with one, over-communicate. So from this point on, you tell that person, look, we're going to be in constant communication just so you can see where I'm headed. And if this is a new start and it's not just a one and done, I think that's important. Number two, let's have a scheduled check-in. So whether that's 2 weeks out, 3 weeks out, a month out, let's get something on the calendar to come back and revisit this event, the break of trust. Let's not sweep it under the rug. Let's not pretend it didn't happen. Let's use that to say this can't happen again. I mean, this was detrimental to our relationship, to the organization. Keep hashing it out over and over again, but at least in a month right. out, let's do it. We owe it to each other to do that. So I think those two things help with that. And I'll also say the third thing is I try not to do anything in a vacuum. Triads are important to me. There's a magic to that number, but having another person that is sitting out there that had nothing to do with the situation, but is along for the ride, because I can say anything I want to Dustin behind closed doors, and then I can deny it later. But if I have Dustin there and I have Caitlin there, Caitlin heard the whole thing too. So now there's two people that can say, no, this is what Tommy said. This is what he's going to do. I think there's power in that. There's power in that.
Yeah, I like the triad. Not many people have talked about that, but like you said, three strands aren't easily broken. And so there's just things that you can accomplish within that. Where my head has been and why I kind of asked that is that, like, I've got educator friends who I think have left education or have limited their ability to lead because of a breach of trust that they may have led to, or a failure or a mistake that they don't feel like they can come back from. I'm just curious, has there been any failures that you've experienced in your life professionally that at the time may have felt like, how am I ever going to get over this? And it led to actually some doors opening to you being more effective today.
Okay, wow. Very timely. I alluded to earlier leadership development, and we work with a group, pro advisor coaches, that came in and said, as executive team, we're going to coach you. And individually they coach us, and as a group they coach us. The prompt that they used 2 weeks ago was, pick the worst moment in your life. The worst moment in your life, and now come up with three things that you are so thankful for because of that situation. And all of us came up with things, whether the death of a father, the death of a spouse, losing out on a career opportunity because of a bad choice, all these things that at the time you said, the darkest moment of your life. But because of that, I met my soulmate. Because of that, I got another job that has changed my life. I mean, there's things that have happened because of that. So to answer your question, let's look at something that happened. I literally sat down and had lunch with an educator that made a very bad choice, a 30 plus year vet in education that was a game changer, is a game changer, going through a tough patch. And he thought his career was over because of that. And my meeting with him off campus, my badge was off. I'm like, I'm talking to you as a colleague now. I'm not a superintendent. And you are no longer a victim. From this point forth, you're no longer, but you're a survivor of a decision. And because of that, here's some steps that we're going to put in place. But darn it, you're going to be better than you've ever been. And we'll see in August when he comes back. Listen, if you don't get a second chance, I would not be in this chair if I didn't get a second chance. And so third and fourth, we'll argue third and fourth chances. but second chance, unless you're harming kids, you know, in a bad way, like then that's obviously non-negotiable. But let's be real with it. And no one is perfect. Yeah. And also, I think, what do we do for kids then, right? If our mentality is we're punitive when it comes to everything we do, then do I want teachers to be that with a kid? You know, if you make a mistake in class, oh, you're one and done. So yeah, that's a good question. And I've really not thought about that as far as how that leads to culture shaping, but I really think it does.
Yeah, absolutely. As I'm going to honor your time. I am going to get you out of here in time, even though you look at time differently.
I do. I wish we could have discussed that, but yeah.
Tommy, we're not going Dr. Schmalzy. We're going Tommy.
Good.
Tell us how you view time, because we had this kind of outside the box conversation.
Yeah, and I love that. I'll make it quick, but people look at time as usury. Like you only have 24 hours in a day. And I believe that you have 24 hours. But I challenge, I have 2,500 employees about, and I challenge them at our back to school rally where everybody's together in a coliseum. I said, raise your hand if you've ever come talk to me. And there's a couple of hands that went up, and I said, I'm challenging you. Come, my door's open. I want to come hear from you. Back to the grassroots. And what I found is most of them have always, hey, I'm sorry, I took so much of your time. Or I took this. I said, first of all, you didn't take time, right? We shared time. And so here's how I think about time. And this is what's funny, but we spent 30 minutes together, Dustin, you and I. You spent 30 minutes, I spent 30 minutes. So really together, we spent an hour of time, 30th of your 30. So our time is doubled if used wisely. And if you look at time that way, it changes the paradigm of wasted time and wasted time too. All right. If you wasted half an hour, I wasted half an hour. We actually wasted an hour of time. So it goes both ways. So I look at it as thank you for sharing your time with me, because you only get 24 hours in a day too.
I love that. So other than sharing time versus wasted time, What advice do you have for current leaders as well as aspiring leaders as they think about going into this school year?
Authenticity. Number one rule of leadership is be true to your leadership style. Don't try to be a heavy-handed person if you're not. Don't try to be a hard-on-the-sleeve person if you're not. People see right through that. Be consistent with that. Now, you have to step across the line at times, and you have to be a complete leader, but be true to your style. Number two, don't be afraid to ask for help. You don't know what it's like to get in that chair. You think you know what it's like. As a teacher, I said, what does assistant principal do all day? And they just walk around, they're playing solitaire on the computer or something. Then you become assistant principal. And you're like, wow, this is tough. But what does a principal do all day? I'm doing everything for the principal. And then you become a principal and you're like, wow, this is tough. But what do they do at the district office? They just hand down mandates, you know, as you go up. So don't be afraid to ask for help. And then thirdly, I think you got to meet people where they are. You know, if you're behind a desk, you're doing the wrong thing. It's just unfortunate you have something to do behind the desk. Absolutely. Check that box. But man, you're in a people organization. That's what you're in. So rub elbows with the people that you work with.
That's the best. I love it. All right, let's get into rapid fire real quick so I can honor the time.
Okay.
What is a habit or discipline you utilize either daily or weekly to help you be the best version of yourself?
Therapy. I think you have to have an outlet, whether that's, I do stuff athletic. I always want to be active. And then music. I play piano and, that's my therapy. I close the door and I play. I think everybody needs that outlet and you need that alone time to sharpen yourself.
Tommy, and no one's going to get this reference, but I can't believe you and I are both busting Mark's chops earlier about how he won the June poll. You are an athlete and a musician. I wish I can sing, but I wish I could play an instrument. But you got blessed on the court and off the court. I get it. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I did. And it's a gift. And we you know, we can delve into that in a later conversation, but I didn't earn any of that. And I did work hard, but there was a foundation already built in me. And we can talk about divinity and all that stuff too. But that's how I believe. It's a gift that if I keep to myself, I'm selfish. So right now I use it just as a therapeutic means. You know, there's no audience. I don't lead praise and worship anymore. I don't play in a rock band anymore. I lost my hair. I don't have a mullet. But for me, it makes me be creative. It pushes me to the right brain. And I think that's important as a leader. So that's a habit that I've developed.
That's great. I love it. What's a book, or you can cheat and have books that you read recently, or, you know, maybe way back in your career that you recommend others read?
And this shameless plug, but The Speed of Trust, I read once a year. And those people that understand why that's a shameless plug, but I use that as a foundation to develop leaders. And so because of that, I use it to develop me. I use it as a role model. I use the surveys in there to check and balance me, to check and balance our organization. Are we a tax? Are we a dividend? How is it come when it comes to trust? Because without that, your organization is stagnant. So Speed of Trust is one. Smart Brevity is another, on how we do meetings and what we're thinking. We're still struggling with that in Rock Hill Schools. Those are hard habits to break, those, you know, 3-hour long meetings. But we're getting better, because now now we're at least focused on it. We have people holding us accountable. So those two books, I think, at this point.
That's great. All right. I live in St. Louis. We're obsessed with baseball. My 10-year-old has walk-up songs on his team now. So we asked this question.
Oh, yeah.
We've been asking for a year. What would be your walk-up song if you had a walk-up song?
Easy. Don't Stop Believing. I'm a big, you know, journey. but just what that song says, right? Now, they're talking about a relationship, but I'm talking about just you. When you look at yourself in the mirror, what do you say? What's your self-talk? And everybody's breaking you down. So build yourself up. One way, don't stop believing in yourself. Yeah, don't stop.
My wife and I are also big Journey fans. We went to visit my mom in Tallahassee, Florida, and my mom wasn't using tickets to go to this event. So we got to go and have a private concert with Journey this year. And it was like, you know, probably just 1,000 people with a private concert with Journey. It was absolutely epic. And obviously we waited for that song to change our lives. So
right.
I love that.
Well, think of it every time. Think of me. Think of me every time you hear that song, Dustin.
Yeah. last rapid fire question, and I'm going to do one more thing for you, but leadership advice. You're around great leaders often. You could be following people on social media, or it could be at conferences right now, or just people in your life that are talking to you. What's the best piece of leadership advice you've received recently that is just on top of mind that you want to share with others?
There's a lot to choose from. I've been pruned this year through our coaching, and top of the head thing is a great question. What is preventing you? So I'll say me. So Tommy, what is preventing you from reaching your 10-year goal in 6 months? So that's a proven technique to get you to think, why aren't we rapid growth here? Why aren't we accelerating? Why aren't we growing as a district? Why aren't we improving test scores? Why, as an educator, you have a 10-year goal, but 10 years from now, by that time you get there, you're going to have another 10-year goal. So let's look at actually journaling. Take thought time, and this is where this comes. So in the end, it leads to thought time. If you don't have 15 minutes every day that you just sit and write or sit and think, you're missing the mark. So this is sharpening the saw. So if we're going to look at a 7 habit, this is the number one thing you can do is spend time planning. What is your day like? What, you know, let's look at those meetings and let's take 15 minutes to say, how can I have the best win-win solution coming out of this meeting? And journal it. And then the trick is this: use that journal to go back and reflect. So 6 months ago, pull out that journal 6 months ago and look, what were you dealing with? What are you, And if you're dealing with the same things over and over again, you need help. You need help in that situation. If you're right. So that's the insanity. But if not, if you're like, wow, I did a lot of growing and I helped the organization grow because I did this. Let's do more of that. Let's get to more of that. So I would say that 6 months to 10 years, let's look at how to expedite that. And then think time, quality think time.
That's awesome. Well, before I let you go, as the head recruiter of Rock Hill Schools, what do you see as the future of Rock Hill Schools? Sell the vision of what you guys are going after over, I would say, the next 10 years, but the next 6 months, the next, you know, 3 years, 5 years. Why do people come work with you? What do people in the community need to understand about where you're going and why they want to send their kids there and move to your community?
Number one is my vision 2.5 years ago was I want to be a place where leaders are created. Leaders are built here. Leaders are developed here, however you want to term that. And when I mean leader, I mean everybody. I mean community. I have a strong partnership with the Chamber of Commerce. They've been big supporters of us. So we have become the first South Carolina Leader in Me school district. There's a lot of Leader in Me schools. There's elementary schools. There's middle schools, high schools. I said, a shame on us if we say just these kids at this school get to do this. This is how all of us should be. This is why we're here. We're here to lead in our own way, and all of us can lead. I get excited, Dustin, about this. So if you come work for me, we will definitely be having a conversation about how are you as a leader. Our back to school bash this year is all about the 7 habits and all about looking at yourself as a leader and looking at your genius. I just get so pumped up. This is my pregame. You're opening up the coach in me. This is why we're here. Yeah, English is important. Math is important. You know, whatever. That's a foundation for you to reach a kid and to open the eyes to that kid, back to Sarah Anderson, that every one of you can change the world. You will change the world if given the opportunity, and you got to go make those opportunities. And we're going to develop in you the skill sets to go do that. So if you want to be part of that train and know in 3 years, 10 years, 20 years, you've created a pipeline of leaders in every facet, then come work to Rock Hill Schools. Come here and develop with us and grow with us. That would be my plug.
I love it. Hi, Tommy, Dr. Smalley. I know you don't need me to call you that, but
yeah,
the official title right now. This was such a blessing. I had a blast. It is by far and away exceeded my expectations. Again, I will say it publicly now, but I've said privately. One, I've been looking forward to this since February, but two, I did not want to reschedule again, and I'm stuck in that airport world in Atlanta. And so I apologize for wearing the same clothes and the hat and everything the last 3 days. But like, don't let that distract you from how excited I am to just be here with you. And I do believe the words you've shared, the advice you've brought today are going to change a lot of lives. And I mean that so sincerely and so deeply. I just thank you for bringing your whole head and your whole heart to this. And I think it's going to be awesome to see the waves, and not to be too corny again, the rain it continues to create.
Yes. Yeah. Well, again, I thank you for this opportunity. I'm humbled by it. To think, you know, 30 some years ago that I would be considered a leader. It just makes me smile because it shows that anyone can do it if you have that passion in the heart. So Dustin, thank you for this opportunity, and keep dibs on us. Like you said, I'll shameless plug. Those listeners out there, the people that are watching, are going to say, man, what's up with Rock Hill? Let me go investigate. TouchHeartsTeach.com. TouchHeartsTeach.com is the page you go to see what we're about.
Love it. Well, we'll definitely have you back on. So I can't wait for that.
Thank you.